Go ahead and get started. How'd homework three go? See a lot of smiles and laughs, which means it went great and you enjoyed it. Any dissenting comments? Concerns, questions? Okay. Yeah.
So the high side is set on the right side of the circuit on problem one, which is if the body got a forward bias in cut time.
There's a level of memory expected in that question that I just don't have. Right. Yeah. All devices, IG, L and C out are very large. You have power transfer going that way. You're operating in full buck boost mode. So, what's the question? After high side device on the output side shuts off, what do I ask you to do with dead times? Dead times, but you may assume they're small. So, in general, that is, actually, I've got something here. Compared to what we've looked at with a single half bridge, all this is two of them where the switching conditions for the devices are going to be opposite. This high side and that low side are going to have the same condition. This high side and that low side are going to have the same condition. So with that, you'll find that it looks like basically like what I've drawn. If you just pick one of these resonant curves here, and I think the problem has some discussion of that, but you'd have one half bridge where the high side device and one half bridge where the low side device is going to have one of these transitions where during the entire dead time it'll just stay on. That happens any time where the current sticks and it's of a polarity such that as soon as I shut off that device, it just turns the body dial back on. If that current doesn't change value, really change polarity, then it's just going to keep the dead time on. It's going to keep the body dial on during the entire dead time. And then at the end, when you finally turn the other device on, you're going to have one of these big loss transitions with full overlap, COSS, reverse recovery, if it existed, if it's being modeled. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Explain to me the question then, again.
I mean, the way that I pictured the work in my head was that the current would be so, it would be negative IG.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
All the time. Yes, no. I was asking it.
All the time, like outside of dead times?
No. Never mind.
So this one, we're clear. Then you're saying this one should always be body dial conducting as well?
No, I think that I just want to know
while the device is not conducting, so you're saying the high side device not conducting the low side device.
I guess our audience will be revealed with that.
Okay. Homework was already due. Okay. I guess if you're happy with that, otherwise, if you want to come up after class, we can talk more about it. I'm not sure. I apologize if I haven't answered your question. Anything else? Okay. Then plan for today. In the last class, we were looking at nonlinear capacitors and how we can translate them into linear equivalents for the purpose of doing things like solving COSS type losses. So now looking back at these waveforms, we've gone through and we've talked about how to solve full COSS losses, how to solve overlap losses, cloud conduction, reverse recovery, you know. Partial overlap, we talked a little bit about. Partial COSS, we could solve just by changing the limits of integration on our linear equivalent. The next thing we really want to talk about is this variability here. And particularly as I start looking at converter designs where the inductor current is not well approximated as constant, how do I know what's happening in these dead times where I do have a resonant type transition? Alternatively, we said we really like this transition here where I resonate up and get zero voltage switching. How do I design the converter to achieve that? What combination of inductor, initial current, dead time capacitances will allow me to get a very nice soft switching transition here? Otherwise, how do I know how much energy I'm going to lose? So for that, as promised at the end of last lecture, we're going to introduce a technique called state plane analysis. And state plane analysis is a tool used for the analysis of single inductor, single capacitor resonant circuits. It allows us to use really geometry and trig rather than differential equations type techniques. So it's a graphical technique, allows us to simplify differential equations of a certain form. So to motivate, what I'm going to look at is a couple different converters. Here a buck and a four switch buck boost. And we're really concerned with what's happening in the circuit during these dead times. Should be relatively short times relative to the overall switching period. And during that dead time, devices are off, at least in the buck boost, one of the half bridges, but we'll assume it's in buck boost mode, so all four devices are off. In the case of the buck, we're going to look at what's the equivalent circuit that we're going to analyze. We'll do the same on the buck boost. I've drawn CDS explicitly up here. I didn't draw it here because it started to get messy, but all these devices have a CDS. Okay. Before we can apply state plane analysis, there's going to be a couple of assumptions. So first, it's only going to work if we assume CDS is linear. Which is an assumption we can enforce by using an appropriate linear equivalent. I mentioned last time there's a variety of linear equivalents other than the two that we discussed in detail. I won't expect you to use those. In some conditions here, they may be the appropriate linear equivalent. As far as what I expect you guys to be able to do on homeworks and exams, I'll either tell you which equivalent to use or give you a linear capacitor to start with. But there will be a clear path how to replace the nonlinear element with a linear capacitor that will allow this analysis to work. Okay. And then the other thing I'm going to do just as I'm reducing these two circuits is I'm going to assume C out much greater than CDS. That is a restriction on how this circuit is designed. As I mentioned before, it's one that's going to be inherently true if I'm talking about a DC to DC converter. I definitely better have more capacitance here than here, because this thing's not going to operate like a DC to DC. So if that's true, what I'm going to find is that during one of these short dead times, small ripple will apply on C out. It's much greater than the dynamics of the circuit with respect to CDS. Then even if I didn't design it for a true small ripple over one period, it's going to have very small change in voltage over one dead time. It'll approximate V as constant over that dead time. Most likely, I have designed C out anyway to be big enough that it's constant over one switching period. Okay. So then, if I wanted to analyze the behavior during this dead time when both devices are off, I could look at this circuit and say my equivalent is, and it looks like VG CDS, CDS. L, C out, R. Voltage V here. If I assume C out sufficiently larger than these, sufficiently big enough capacitance, I can approximate V as constant during this interval, during the dead time. And then I can further reduce this and say this is roughly equivalent to something that looks like this. L connected to just a constant voltage at the output. Over here on the left, I can do some simplification. Here I've got already a true DC source. So these two capacitors have the same DVDT. They're really in parallel as far as AC signals, because this is ground, this is a small signal ground. So I can pull these around and put these two capacitors in parallel for any type of AC analysis. When I get it, something that looks like 2 CDS, the voltage here is still this voltage. So I labeled it already. Okay, if I wanted to simplify down this buck boost converter, bottom would look like during the dead time, VG, CDS, CDS, O, CDS, CDS. Applying the same assumption, output small ripple. I have a constant output voltage. And then doing the same thing I did with these two capacitors on the half bridge of the buck. Say these nodes are more or less DC, those are small signal grounds. So my two capacitors, my two high side set output capacitances are effectively in parallel with the low side set. That will give me a circuit that looks like L, 2 CDS, 2 CDS. Then these two 2 CDS caps are in series. Effectively, what I have a circuit, that looks like L, CDS. Clear, draw the intermediate step. Putting these in parallel in the series combination, okay? So what I'm trying to motivate here is for a wide variety of topologies. When we want to know what's going on during this dead time, it reduces to an equivalent circuit that has an inductor, a capacitor, and possibly some sources, possibly some DC sources, voltage or current. So if I have a technique that makes it really easy for me to predict behaviors of a circuit like this, that'll be broadly applicable to many topologies. I mentioned briefly, state plane analysis can apply to one inductor, one capacitor circuits, but including circuits that can be reduced such that the dominant behaviors are modeled by one L and one C. Here, I'm talking about four capacitors, but as far as the AC equivalent, I can make them one. Okay. An important thing in this process is keeping track of what the effects of your simplification are on the DC values. Here I did AC equivalence. In this top one, I pulled this capacitor down and put it in parallel with my low side capacitance. So the voltage on it remained the switch node voltage. In this one, by putting all four of these caps together, I only have one voltage and it's the voltage on the inductor. So I, in this circuit, no longer have this switch node voltage or this switch node voltage. Only voltage that remains is the voltage on the inductor. Once I solve this, if I want to know what's happening here, I have to think back, how did I get here? Okay, if these are the same thing, then the sum of these two voltages, this voltage, back out to get those switch node voltages back. Okay. So similarly here, if I'm doing an AC equivalent, I could just short this DC source out, right? That would then give me a circuit that looks like this. If I wanted to get the switch node, I'd have to take this capacitor voltage and subtract that voltage back out. So I leave it in there so I don't have to do that extra step. Right. It'll become a little more clear once we get through the method. Okay, so my proposal, my motivation there is that I can look at a general circuit that looks like this, one inductor, one capacitor, and possibly, don't care whether they're there or not, DC current and voltage sources. And if I can solve this real simply and accurately, that's going to apply to resonant behaviors in many different power converter topologies. So we're going to look at solving this. This is just some general LC resonant circuit with some DC bias. Values LC and then sources VDC, IDC. So we're going to do most of the painful way once, going through the differential equations to prove out a method, and then hopefully not have to do it again. Okay. So, general approach with differential equations, I can write two first order differential equations from the circuit, one from the capacitor, one from the inductor. Two equations are going to look like, for the capacitor, C dVC dt, equal to the current in the capacitor, which is IL minus IDC. For the inductor, L DIL DT equal to VDC minus voltage on the capacitor. Okay, if I combine those two together, do that in a couple of different ways. What I'll do is take equation 2, VDC minus VC is equal to L DIDT, and I'm going to plug in for IL from the top equation. L is C dVC dt plus IDC. We've got this term, I've got a derivative of two things. This is going to give me a second derivative of VC, and then I've got the time derivative of my DC current. That's just going to go to zero. So I'll end up with VDC minus DC equal to LC D squared VC DT squared. Rearranging a little bit to make this look more like standard form. VC over DT squared plus V sub C minus VDC zero. Okay, so I get a second order differential equation. Second order differential equation has a coefficient of zero for the first derivative of VC, which lets me know that the solution to this is going to be sines and cosines plus some particular solution. I know that as I go through and solve this to get time domain answers for VC, I should have something that looks like some coefficient times the sine of something in the time domain, some coefficient times a cosine of something, plus any particular solution. This, anything that makes this expression zero, plus the particular part. Okay. Particular solution we can get by inspection. What is the value that's going to make this true? Well, if I set DC equal to VDC, second derivative will go away and I'll have VDC minus VDC. I know this will be VDC. And then I have to solve for coefficients out front and what's inside the parentheses here for the sine and cosine. That, or generally, if you choose one, I tell you, okay, do A sine of something plus B sine of something, plug it in, solve, set to zero, take the derivative, figure out what those things are. You got time for that. Let's just write them. This will be L over C times I naught minus IDC. Sine of T over root LC plus V naught minus VDC cosine of T over root LC. In the first parentheses, yes. Should be no surprise there. I expect something you guys derive in some time. Okay. Then once I have my solution in this equation, I got my second order equation just in terms of VC, I can go back and plug in, solve what IL is, and that's going to give me IL in a very similar form, root C over L, VDC minus V naught, sine of T over root LC, plus I naught minus IDC, cosine T over root LC plus IDC, where these two values, V naught and I naught, are my initial conditions. I need to supply, I need to have two initial conditions for a second order differential equation to get a complete answer. So, initial conditions, just generally, VC of T is equal to zero, V naught, IL of T is equal to zero, is I naught. Okay, so there's my full time domain solution to this resonant circuit. And let's see what we can do with it. So I'm going to take these equations and I'm going to introduce a little bit of notation you've all seen before, but let's put in, define omega naught is 1 over root LC, which is 2 pi F naught, the resonant frequency of the circuit. R naught, root L over C is the characteristic impedance of this resonance. If I plug those two things in, surprisingly, all of my sines and cosines, the argument is going to be omega naught T. And then I'm going to get an R naught here and a 1 over R naught here. Okay. So it'll look like V sub C is R naught, I naught minus IDC sine omega naught T plus V naught minus VDC cosine of omega naught T plus VDC IL 1 over R naught, naught minus VDC, sine omega naught T plus just to make these things a little bit easier to write. Now, I'm going to propose we do something just to try out and see how it affects things. So I'm going to propose we normalize both of these, my capacitor voltage and my inductor current expression, according to the following. I'm going to call normalized voltages M. My M sub C is V sub C divided by some base voltage. Base voltage is, in fact, arbitrary, just some constant voltage that I say I'm going to divide through to normalize the amplitude of VC. V base is arbitrary DC voltage used for normalization. Then I'm going to normalize my currents such that JL, which is my normalized current, is IL over I base. Take all my currents, divide them by some I base, call them J at that point because I've changed the amplitude of them. I base is not arbitrary. I base is V base over R naught. The last part is I'm going to say for any values that I'm interested in, I'm going to define theta sub anything is omega naught times any time, where omega naught is omega naught 1 over root LC. Okay. Here I just put X subscript as a placeholder. I don't talk about any specific times yet. Time is my variable. If I wanted to solve for a specific time, that would translate in my normalized domain into an angle of these sines and cosines. Okay. Now, let's say I apply this normalization. On the next slide, I've copied these equations, so I don't have to rewrite them. As I begin normalizing, without the, this is R naught, and this is 1 over R naught here, and everything in parentheses is omega naught T in the arguments for sines and cosines. So I have to pick a V base as I want to normalize. The goal is to write expressions for what is M sub C. What is J sub L? So according to this normalization I proposed, I can pick whatever V base I want, and then I base is going to be defined. If I pick V base is equal to 17 volts, then any manipulation I do, I'm going to have to carry around this V base is equal to 17 volts. I'm going to be a bit strategic, and I'm going to say, let's pick V base is equal to VDC. As I divide through, then I'll get some nice ones, some things that cancel out. Nothing about what I'm presenting would work any differently if I picked a different V base and just make the algebra more cumbersome by an arbitrary thing. So you can pick whatever one you want. some choices are better than others, though, just for your own efforts. An I-base is VDC over R-naught. My M sub C is then VC over VDC, and that looks like 1 plus V-naught over VDC minus 1 cosine omega-naught T plus I-naught minus IDC over VDC times R naught sine omega naught T. And for JL, I'm going to divide through by VDC over R naught. I'll get IDC R naught over VDC plus R naught over VDC I-naught minus IDC cosine omega naught T plus R-naught 1 minus V-naught over VDC sine of omega naught T. Excuse me. R naught, there's a 1 over R naught here. This is R naught times 1 over R naught that I lost. Originally wrote it. I pulled the R naught from here, but didn't include this one. So those two things are going to go to 1. That's important because I couldn't figure out how I was going to make the next point I want to make, which is, you see any commonalities here? This coefficient and this coefficient, same magnitude, just negatives of one another. This coefficient and this coefficient are the same thing. So this has a form that looks like M sub C is equal to 1 plus A cosine omega naught T plus B sine omega naught T. Then J sub L is this term out front plus B cosine omega naught T minus A sine omega naught T. Term out front, and I'll just leave as is. IDC R naught over VDC. So that's interesting. This form has some implications on what the relationship between these two signals is. And I'm going to demonstrate those by jumping to the conclusion, which is, why don't we try out at M sub C minus 1 squared plus J sub L minus IDC R naught over VDC squared. I'm going to take both of these, subtract off the non-time varying terms, and square them, add them together. What would that give me? Going to look like, I'll get rid of these terms, I'm going to square this, I'll get a squared cosine squared plus b squared sine squared plus 2ab cosine sine. from this term. And this one, you know, get rid of this constant term, square this. That's going to give me b squared cosine squared plus a squared sine squared minus 2ab cosine omega naught t sine omega naught t. These swap coefficients, the negative signs, the cross terms cancel. Plus 2ab cosine sine minus 2ab cosine sine. Subtract those from one another and they're gone. And then what I'm left with is a squared cosine squared plus a squared sine squared. And then b squared sine squared plus b squared cosine squared. That looks like, if I factor out these coefficients up front, a squared times cosine squared omega naught t plus sine squared omega naught t plus b squared cosine squared omega naught t plus sine squared omega naught t. Cosine squared plus sine squared, unity. So this goes to one, this goes to one. What I get is this all is equal to a squared plus b squared. A and b are my coefficients. I could plug in a is v naught over vdc minus one. B is I naught minus IDC times R naught over VDC. That's going to look like A squared Okay, so I took this and I saw that it's equal to this. Let's take that full equation and put it together on the next slide. So what I have is m sub c, write explicitly, this one's time varying, plus j sub l minus, let's say, IDC r naught over VDC. Is equal to V naught over VDC minus one squared plus R naught over VDC I naught minus IDC squared. This all is some constant. The DC sources, my initial conditions, inductance and capacitance, the square root of their difference. This is some constant value. Sum of squares of my two signals minus something. What does this equation describe geometrically? The circle. This is the equation for a circle. And some C and JL will form a circle, offset the center of it by this much in the M direction, this much in the J direction, and this is the square of its radius. So it has a center at m sub c is equal to 1. And J sub L is equal to IDC R naught over VDC. And the radius is R squared is equal to V naught over VDC minus 1 squared plus R naught minus IDC VDC squared. So what is that going to look like? I wanted to plot on the M sub C, J sub L axes. The moment I don't have values for anything, so anything could be greater or less than zero, so I'll make some assumptions about where to put this. But generally, I've got a center somewhere here at M sub C is 1, J sub L is this expression. What I'm going to do is give this a name. This is IDC over I base, and I'm just going to call that capital JDC, which is just IDC over I base, the normalized value for JDC, normalized value of IDC. Okay. And then I have this radius. This expression for the radius, R squared equals something squared plus something squared, sure looks a whole lot like a Pythagorean theorem type equation to me. I did the square root. R is the square root of all this. Looks like an x squared and a y squared. If I look at that, I've got V naught over VDC minus 1, which means it's 1 in the x direction, and then it goes V naught over VDC past that. So that would put me somewhere out here where my value is V naught over VDC. This was 1. In the y direction, my center is at JDC. Look at this here. This looks like a J naught minus a JDC, which means somewhere up here at J naught, my radius is between those two points. Okay. Call this M naught similarly, just the normalized V naught. J naught is I naught over I base. Okay, so my center is 1 in JDC. My radius, R, if I wanted to write an expression for it as I drew it, it would be V naught over VDC minus 1 squared plus J naught minus JDC squared, which is this term, noting that this is I naught minus IDC over I base. Then this equation describes a circle around this point with a constant radius R. Okay, let's draw this a little clearer on the next slide. So what's the beauty of doing this? beauty is, and we've really already seen this a little bit, I know how to work with equations of circles and subscribe triangles. So I'm able to just look at this and say, okay, where's this point? Well, if I know this is the radius, that looks like the Pythagorean theorem. So here's my distance in the x and y direction. I wanted to know, for example, what's some value over here. I know how to apply trig or other equations to be able to calculate any point on this circle. This is normalized voltages and currents. But if I can calculate anything on the state plane, I can denormalize to get back into the time domain, get my answer simply. Denormalizing, just apply my normalization equations in reverse. I have some M sub C and I multiply by V base, I'll get back voltage. So this allows me to take some analysis where I would have to solve it using the differential equations. And I'm going to map it to geometric or trig type analysis to get the answer. And I'm able to do that under some assumptions. The circuit is a 1L, 1C, may have DC sources or doesn't need to. But under those assumptions, I can use this type of analysis. So, see what that might look like. So this is state plane analysis. Having gone through this derivation, you don't need to, again, you can apply the result and go immediately to the state plane from the conditions of your circuit. So if I have some general circuit that looks like what we were looking at, I can take this and immediately say, if I want to apply state plane analysis, I'm going to be looking at the normalized capacitor voltage and inductor current, which will be JL and M sub C, where M sub C is equal to VC over V base. V base equals whatever you like. JL equal to IL over I base. I base is equal to V base over R naught. And then in order to be able to plot it, I only need to consider two things. One, where is the center of this circle? And two, how big is it? Okay. So the circle center . If I look back here, I know the answer is the circle center is at a value of VDC and IDC. Why is that? This is the average value of the voltage and current as this thing is resonating. And that is this circuit or any general resonant circuit going to be the DC solution to this. What is the voltage on the capacitor and current in the inductor that would allow this thing to just sit constant with no resonance? Okay. For this, if there's any current in the capacitor, its voltage is changing. If there's any voltage on the inductor, its current is changing. The only way to get this thing to sit at DC, for the voltage on the inductor to be zero, the current at the capacitor to be zero, which means VC is VDC and IL is IDC. Circle center is the DC solution to the circuit, which is V sub C is equal to VDC IL is equal to IDC, the circuit as I've drawn it here, means on my state plane, M sub C is equal to VDC over V base, J sub L. Just more generally call these MDC and JDC. VDC divided by whatever V base I chose, IDC divided by whatever I base I chose. So with that, I can sketch the center, MDC, JDC. And then to figure out the radius, knowing now that this is going to be a circle, all I need is a single point on that circle. And one single point that I have immediately is whatever my initial condition was. My initial condition VC of T is equal to 0 is V naught. IL of T is equal to 0 is I naught. Gives me an M naught, J naught initial point, which is wherever it is. You can just draw it up here, but those values will be dictated by whatever circuit you're solving. Once I have those two, I've defined my circle. The radius is the distance between these two points, and the circle is going to sweep out around the center with constant radius. This is my DC solution. This is my initial condition. One more thing, I don't quite have time for. There is always a direction associated with a state plane arc. Okay. So I need to figure out, here's my initial operating point. Am I going to resonate in this direction, or am I going to resonate in this direction? So the direction, I need to look at the first derivatives. Of my two states, V sub C and IL. Easiest way is to just look at them at T is equal to 0. For this circuit, at T is equal to 0, when I'm at my initial condition, voltage on the inductor is going to be VDC minus V naught. Current in the capacitor is going to be IL minus IDC. So I'll have C DVC DT equal to current in the capacitor, IL minus I naught. If I look at how I've drawn this, J naught is bigger than L minus, excuse me, IDC. Makes sense. Where at T is equal to 0, the current in the inductor IL is I naught. And that all backwards. So I've got I naught greater than IDC. That means this term is positive, which means dVdt is positive. So I normalize, divide that by M base. That means the initial change in M sub C is positive, which means it's going to resonate this way. Of the two options, this one has M sub C initially increasing. This one has it initially decreasing. So our direction has to be this way. I could double check myself there. I was a bit sloppy with my arithmetic by looking at the initial condition on the other space, state LDIL dt is equal to voltage on the inductor at time t is equal to zero. That's going to be VDC minus V naught, the initial capacitor voltage. As I've drawn it, VDC is less than V naught, so the inductor current is initially decreasing. On my j-axis, I'm initially decreasing. Always the direction associated with the state plane. Okay, that's the method, and I can get to here, sketch this thing, define the full details of it without ever using a differential equation. Looking at the circuit by inspection, saying what the DC solution is, having an initial condition on it. Next class, we'll look at then how does this simplify if I want to solve for things like peak currents during resonances and times when voltages hit zero or VDC. I can do that all just by looking at the state plane. Pick up there. Have a good weekend.